Welcome back to the Bryan Park Project from NPR News. We are always online at npr.org. Some people like to go out and make their friends to earn them, to be nice to other people, perhaps charming, perhaps have something interesting to say. Not me. I prefer surrounding myself with people who are more or less contractually obligated to be here. So in that vein, I have Dan Pashman, I have Ian Chillog, I have Patricia McKinney, and let's just call this thing The Most. And leading us off on a collection of the most emailed stories from around the internet is my friend, Dan.
Yeah, speaking of which, Mike, I haven't gotten the check for July yet.
Yeah.
You can make sure that gets to me by the end
Note
of the day.
Note to yourself. Send
Appreciate
out friend
that.
Checks.
Yes. Most emailed here from the Los Angeles Times. Folks out in California, as of today, the new hands-free cell phone law goes into effect in California. If you're going to use your cell phone for talking or texting, you need a headset. You cannot just talk into the phone. But as this article points out, that's not likely to make the roads any safer, because the truth is that hands-free cell phones use is not any safer than normal cell phone use. In fact, one study in 2005 found that people who are drunk don't break any slower, are not any more delinquent in their breaking than people who are using hands-free cell phone devices, basically because your brain cannot multitask so well. It can only handle so much input at once, and therefore when you're talking on the phone, you're distracted and you're not a good driver, even if you have a hands-free device.
Couple follow-up questions. One,
yes.
What the heck will a headset help you with texting? That's pretty stupid.
It won't. I think texting is totally outlawed.
Okay, that's good. Two, the fact that traffic in LA moves no more than like 4 miles an hour, does that affect their findings at all?
It does. Well, because the most common accident caused by the fact that you're distracted and you're not paying attention is rear-ending, because you don't respond quickly enough to brake lights in front of you.
Got it.
Also, people talking on cell phones, even with headsets, drive slower, which means more traffic.
Tricia, take us to another place and I hope another time.
Yes, I think I can. I have one of the most popular stories at CNN.com. The headline, Recreating the Sound of Aztec Whistles of Death.
Let's do it.
It's actually an AP story. It's a profile of a guy named Roberto Velasquez in Mexico. He's a mechanical engineer. He's 66 years old, and he's devoted his adult life to recreating the sounds of his pre-Columbian ancestors. And for years they've been, unearthing mummies and, digging up graves and finding these little whistles in the hands of corpses of the Aztecs, and kind of not really knowing what these things were and kind of discarding them and, putting them in museums, but not really doing a lot of research on them. Well, this guy, he's been trying to actually play the sounds, and he thinks that archaeologists really aren't paying enough attention to the noises that these things made. So he recreates a lot of them, blows into them, tries to... Some of them are really, really hard, apparently, to figure out how to make the sounds come out of them.
I wish, though, we had some approximation of what they might sound like.
Well, so there's this... picture a little skull making this sound.
Sounds evil.
Trish, what were you doing in my dreams last night?
That's creepy. I mean, like, especially if you look at the picture, that sounds like somebody screaming. Anyway, the theory is that maybe these were used prior to a human sacrifice. Nice, huh?
I have the most emailed story from the Toronto Star. Truck hauling 12 million bees overturns. Yeah. I don't know if you remember back in the 80s, there was a plan to just truck MX missiles throughout the U.S., and a lot of people said that might not be safe. They should have done the same with bees. Because 12 million bees are overturned in Canada. A couple quotes from the article. One beekeeper described the bees as nasty after the ordeal. Could have also used the word bee-like or apiarian. And here's another quote. And they did speak with a guy from a beekeeper association. This is an expert talking, quote, "You certainly don't want to go walking through a field of disoriented, agitated, and wet honeybees." Thank you.
Thank you, expert.
Yeah, I wasn't sure
that
about
was
that.
That was an expert,
to know.
People.
All right.
So we wouldn't have realized that. But yeah, but they're getting the bees under control.
Oh, good.
Ian. Be careful.
Or maybe...
Yes.
Yeah.
She went
I had
there.
To do it. Somebody had to do it.
The other way, the other strategy for dealing with it, just distribute 12 million bonnets. Ian.
I have a most read from the Seattle Post-Intelligencer. This is really about zoo-goers at the Greater Vancouver Zoo were treated to a rare display of the animal kingdom. An eagle, a trained eagle, got away from the falconer It went, for some reason, if I were an eagle, I wouldn't do this. It went to the lion pen.
Big mistake.
It was hanging out on a log. Some crows came up to it and started harassing it.
Yeah.
I don't know what you say to an eagle to harass it.
But, hey, Baldy.
So their cawing attracted the attention of a lion, and the lion just pounced on the thing, just tore it apart. So the zoo lost an eagle, but people got to see sort of, you know, what happens in the wild. The master falconer at the zoo, he said, you know, that's what lions do. This is the circle of life. You know, she's a bird and they're big cats, and we all know what cats do with birds.
Wait, right. Is that zookeeper? Is that Elton John, the zookeeper?
Yes, he is a zookeeper.
He wears many hats.
And then after giving his quote to the Intelligencer, he had to work his elaborate puppet display.
Can I ask a follow-up?
Quickly.
What kind of eagle was it?
Dead eagle.
Yeah, a golden eagle.
Do they actually coexist pining with lions anywhere in the real wild?
I don't know, Trish.
Only on appetizers.
No, it's okay.
Okay. Matt, you want to take us to the most piece?
I do. I have the most emailed and viewed story at NPR.org right now. It's a report by our dear friend and colleague Robert Smith about the world's smallest national park. Smallest national park in the world. Well, at least in the United States. It's part of NPR's series on national parks. Here's his report.
This is going to be a very short tour. America's tiniest national park is up here on the second floor of an old house in the Society Hill neighborhood of Philadelphia, and I'll show you how small it is. I can walk across it in 1, 2, 3, 4 steps. I'll ask the ranger here, what's the exact size?
0.02 acres.
The name may actually be longer than the actual park. It's the Thaddeus
Kosciuszko National Memorial.
Thaddeus Kosciuszko National Memorial.
Yes.
I guess I shouldn't worry too much about it. Ranger Andrew McDougall tells me that everybody mangles this park's name. The important thing is that you come away with a sense that it's named after a bona fide hero. Kosciuszko came over from his native Poland. He was a military engineer, and he fought in the American Revolutionary War. And to list all of his accomplishments would take, like, I don't know, 6 minutes, which is the length of the movie they play here.
Who is this Polish general that Americans cheer? He was a son of landowning gentry
and a friend of peasants.
Or it could take 12 minutes if you watch the movie again in Polish.
Gorący sierpniowy dzień 1797 roku.
Kosciuszko is like the George Washington of Poland, and Polish Americans have plastered his name on everything. It's on bridges, monuments, mountains. There are cities in Texas and Mississippi named after the guy. This place, this tiny room, was the place Kosciuszko rented for 7 months while he was appealing to Congress for his back pay. I mean, it's no Mount Vernon, but in the 1970s, a Polish-American businessman bought the place and donated it to the National Park Service.
So we kind of just set the room up to look the way it would have looked on any given day that Kosciuszko would have been here. So, you know, it's a little sloppy in the room. There's some papers scattered around.
Now, let's be honest, this is no Liberty Bell. There are not lines around the corner. How long can you go here without anyone stopping by?
Well, that varies depending upon the time of the year.
Gone days, weeks?
No, there's at least one visitor per day.
Okay, if we get bored, we can always play with the interactive displays here.
This is such a small room. Such a small room for such a great man. But it was typical of Thaddeus Kosciuszko.
So we've been open for a while and nobody's coming through the door.
We've had no visitors yet, but that's not uncommon.
It's a waiting game.
It can be.
All right, clearly if I'm going to interview a visitor to this place, I'm going to have to pull one in myself. Excuse me, you guys interested in going into the Thaddeus Kosciuszko National Memorial?
I think maybe a Polish revolutionary hero is probably more at the bottom of my list.
Fair enough, but Thomas Campbell does say that the next time he comes by, he will try and stop in. Back inside, Ranger Andrew McDougall is still waiting patiently. It's actually one of the easier gigs in the Park Service.
We have no shuttle bus, we have no food service, we don't have any camping facilities. Maybe we could look at it as more quality visitation than quantity. The people who are going to make the point to come to this site are people who are going to be very interested.
And sure enough, in the mid-afternoon, the door opens and in walks Jolanta Kardash. She's Polish-American, and she is not going to miss this tiny little corner of the national park system.
He came to America and fought for liberty because that's what he stood for. He believed in it. In Poland, everybody knows him.
She watches the movie, she peers into the exhibit, and then she tells me I've been pronouncing the man's name wrong.
Tadeusz Kosciuszko.
Kosciuszko.
Such a sweet name for a military man.
Ranger McDougall tells her that she might want to come back again. The whole place, all 0.02 acres of it, is going to be rehabbed with all new exhibits and cool new artifacts like the man's sword and a lock of his hair.
The exhibits will really showcase Thaddeus Kosciuszko as an international freedom fighter, or as Thomas Jefferson termed him, the purest son of liberty he had ever known.
It's a lot of praise to fit into a very small park. Robert Smith, NPR News, at the Thaddeus
Kosciuszko.
Kosciuszko
National Memorial in Philadelphia.
You can get a link to that story, all the stories you heard on The Most, on our website, and a correct pronunciation of Thaddeus Kosciuszko, npr.org/Bryant Park.